This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello and welcome to an ILTA podcast. I'm Jack Thompson with Sanofi. I am the e-discovery and legal operations manager for the North American Litigation and Investigations Group at Sanofi US. Today I'm joined by Kim Ann Hernandez from International Paper, Kamoy Foster from Swiss Re, and Bonnie Kennedy with Delta Airlines. We will be discussing the Sedona Conference commentary on Bring Your Own Device, BYOD. Kim Ann, would you like to take a moment to introduce yourself and give the listeners a little information about yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Kim Ann Hernandez. I'm Senior Counsel of Information Technology and e-discovery at International Paper in Memphis, Tennessee, the position I've held for the last 7 years.
Thank you. Kamoy, would you please give a little introduction to yourself for our listeners?
Hi, everyone. I'm Kamoy Foster. I'm the e-discovery manager for the Americas for Swiss Re, and I've been in that role for 2 years now.
Bonnie, would you please give us a little information for our listeners about yourself and Delta Airlines?
Hi, I'm Bonnie Kennedy, the e-discovery manager at Delta Airlines, and I've been here for about 2 years.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. I suppose we should get right to it. As you all know, the commentary provided at the Sedona Conference listed 5 key principles on the subject of Bring Your Own Device and BYOD. And I've asked our esteemed panel to give us their commentary on these principles. And the commentary being provided today is on behalf of the panelists themselves, not of their companies. So I just want to give that quick disclaimer out there. So I'd like to get right into it and ask the first question. I'm going to point this to Kamoy. In regards to principle number 1, concerning an organization's considerations for a BYOD program in face of business needs and objectives, what are your thoughts on the commentary feedback of engaging assessments and considerations to the company when considering risks of a BYOD program within the organization?
I think that's very, very important. And I think the best way to do that is to create a cross-functional team that's from various departments within the company. If the goal is to create, and it should be, a balanced and a reasonable BYOD policy, you need the input from all sorts of stakeholders. For example, your IG team, HR, e-discovery, legal, InfoSec, and IT. And that way, you'll be able to develop a program that is extremely balanced and very reasonable. I also think one of the commentary nailed it when it talked about the key legal factors being accessing the employee-owned device, especially when the password is necessary to be retrieved from the employee. And the best way, I think, to address that is to make sure that providing that password in the event that the data will need to be retrieved is something that's put as a precursor to actually joining the program. So, included in the user end agreement or something like that.
Great. It sounds like there's a good deal of change management that is applied through communications, but executing with various different stakeholders within the organization to come to the table to really realize all the factors involved with how to roll out or, if necessary, roll out a BYOD program for the company. To our other two panelists, regarding this particular question, do you, Bonnie or Kim, do you have any perspectives you'd also like to share?
I love that Kamoy actually talked about that, the PIN, you know, with the Apple devices. When you pass that in, you know, if they're using their iTunes account, you know, going kind of on the privacy piece of it, most people use their personal iTunes account for their business iPhone. Once that Find My iPhone setting is turned on, you actually need that password. Otherwise, the phone becomes kind of a brick and it's no longer really an asset, you know, to reprofile that phone. So things on the IT side, which kind of meld into the HR side, which, you know, in that exit interview, and like Kamoy said, at the onset, like the beginning of the user agreement with the company for BYOD or even company issued phones.
That's a very good point, especially when considering the resources and infrastructure to support such a program, both from a security, privacy, and I would almost call it HR level thinking. That's a very interesting dynamic. Kim Ann, any final thoughts on this subject?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't be the only one who longs for the days of BlackBerrys and how easy it was I mean, some of the things that I think is most difficult about BYOD is that in some real sense, as Bonnie just noted, like even a company issued program, when you're talking about iPhones, for example, are almost BYOD in a certain sense, because you don't have that sort of corporate control that we're used to, like historically, right? Where we could essentially gather text message from our BlackBerry server, or we could control sort of the flow of communication more certainly, just because of the nature of the devices that we're using. I think it's sort of this whole new frontier where we really have to look at is the privacy, the commingling, what sort of settings are we created, the processes that we've set up. You know, how do you deal with that employee who is not going to give you their Apple password or doesn't remember it, even if it's not nefarious, if they don't have that that knowledge? So again, it becomes that brick situation. How are you adequately protecting somebody's like right to privacy? And I think especially when you talk about a global organization, that becomes even more sticky when you think of GDPR and other privacy-driven regulations, even in the US. So for me, it's difficult because the way that mobile devices are growing in the workplace, I think kind of far exceed or outpace sort of the technology and maturity that we have as organizations to contain that or control that environment.
Great. And actually, that's a perfect segue to our next question, which I'm actually going to turn over to you first, regarding employee privacy and the needs. So principle two of the commentary discussed the development and consideration of what a BYOD program should include in its structure. The commentary suggests a number of recommendations for placing the business needs and requirements first in the program, but also considering employee privacy as a need. In your opinion, based on the commentary, what is the core expectation an organization must include in its BYOD program, and how will it impact the employee's responsiveness?
Yeah, I think that first and foremost, you have to have a really strong policy and a training that accompanies that, right? So you as an organization really defines what's the scope of the intended use. How far personal are these personal devices? Are they primarily for business purposes, for individual? How are you making sure that the employees understand that there's a constant element of commingling that happens here? And while we want to protect your rights as an individual, we also have to be mindful of our obligations to the organization. So it's really telling people from the get-go, really, like there's sort of this lower level of expectation of privacy. I feel like a good program should give the employee the right to say upfront, I don't want to participate in this because I understand sort of the limitations I'm putting on my own personal privacy to a certain extent. I mean, I'd also think that the other thing is you have to really look into to technology, because you have to think about, how are you protecting the organizational information? Do you have a mobile device management program in place? Is it segregating? Does it have the encryption? Does it have ways for you to remote wipe these things? Those sort of information. Does it have a way that the employee can delete or remove their personal information or segregate it? So if the instance that you have to collect it or whatnot, you don't have sort of that tension that might naturally arise.
Right. And that plays very well into the whole point of what is the most prior objective that the company must face versus the employee privacy. I would suppose that as a US-based only or North American-based only company, one could argue that the illusion of privacy is not there. However, if you are in a global setting where there are various different country laws in place, privacy is key. As you mentioned, GDPR is definitely a factor here. So how does the company essentially put into place a program that is going to, one, span continents and be effective in a policy setting where there could be changes at any given moment depending on where you live? I'd like to turn it over to Kamoy. What are some of your thoughts on putting the program together based on the organizational needs versus the employee needs, or both?
Well, I think the core expectation when you're putting together a program like this is that protecting and accessing business data for business and legal purposes is a priority. We understand that this is all subject to applicable laws. Most of them, you know, are going to be local laws on privacy and, you know, data protection regulations. But I think an employee needs to understand that while protecting their privacy is important, the company may also access their private data on the device if it's necessary to meet legal obligations. I think these usage restrictions and these caveats may impact whether or not someone will want to enter the program, and I think that's perfectly fine. But it can also provide a very helpful roadmap for people who have these devices. They can just literally just say, well, you know, I know that this is, you know, just because there's personal data on here doesn't mean necessarily mean that my company will not collect data from this phone. So perhaps I'll manage the amount of personal data I keep on this device. So I think it's just very important for companies to be very upfront in their various agreements when they're actually starting these programs, because the whole purpose of this is to provide access to business data on these devices. And I think companies need to be clear about that.
All right. It's a very good indication of where your policy really should lie and what kind of message it sets. Bonnie, just to follow up on this question, what are some of your thoughts on either policy driving or institution of good language for the employee versus the organization's goals?
I agree. I think that there's got to be that user policy on the front end, and it's got to set out the expectations so that the user can be informed enough to decide, do I jump into this program? Do I get a single device and that device a business device only? And two, I think it has a lot to do. You've got to include some MDM, you know, technology if a company is using that, which, you know, in my opinion, they should if they're going to roll out a BYOD, something like AirWatch or something that people know, yeah, they can touch my phone from, you know, wherever I am and delete things. You know, from my perspective, the BYOD, from a user perspective, that means somebody can come and take my phone for however long, you know, if they need to do a forensic collection of data from there, depending on that back end technology, are they going to have to actually take my phone? If I'm going to choose to use texting for business purposes, they can come and take my phone, and I'm agreeing to this. So I think users need to be educated, and it's got to be very clearly stated in that user agreement on the front end.
Completely agreed. And that in lies the challenge for most organizations who want to propose the BYOD policy, where typically our legal departments are the ones that are most concerned about the topics you just outlined versus your IT department or your general organization who is looking at it from a low risk perspective in terms of either economizing the way that their mobile data plan works, and not just for mobile devices in terms of phones, but also for their own computers as well. So it's definitely a very fine line in terms of how the company makes that language available and enforce those rules. Moving on to the next question, which Bonnie, you did touch on, especially from a collection perspective on dealing with e-discovery. E-discovery is a core driver for a legal department to become involved in where information lives as well as how to access it. Principle 3 focuses on e-discovery and how to consider employee-owned devices as a source of e-discovery. The comments discuss the legal implications of scope and relevancy. What, if any, considerations or arguments do you feel can be made here when preparing a BYOD program where ESI will always be a source of ESI?
Well, I think it goes back to if a custodian or, you know, user is going to use their personal Gmail account, you know, for business purposes, that data belongs to the company. You will have to give up passwords and give us access to the application. Going into it, again, it's the expectations on the front end. It's the same thing on the device. To me, from the company perspective, it's the same basic, you know, premise, but it's from the user perspective, kind of the same, but it's, I don't know about you, but my phone, both of them are parts of my body. And if I walk away from a room and walk away without one, I notice it almost immediately. If you're handing that thing, you know, that phone over, and it has your personal and your, you know, your business information on a single phone, from a user perspective, that's a lot different than me just giving you my password for my Gmail account.
Agreed. I mean, company data is company data, but where it lives is usually a little bit subjective because it can be commingled with the rest of your data. And I agree, the approach of having a segregation on a personal device is definitely of high value in ways in which e-discovery can be addressed. From a contextual perspective, and in throwing up the question a little bit more in terms of where to think, does proportionality really play a factor if you know you have a BYOD program and it means extracting and preserving data? What is really the implication there? Unless, and definitely from an e-discovery perspective. Kamoy, do you have any thoughts on how proportionality plays into the BYOD and e-discovery?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's key because what we're looking at here from a collection and preservation standpoint is this data relevant on this device? Is it unique? It might actually be available on one of, you know, the company's other servers, right? Does it make sense for us to, or for the company to extend a massive collection and preservation effort for something that can be retrieved from another source, right? And it obviously will vary from matter to matter, but I think proportionality is definitely a factor in the analysis.
Right. And it usually comes down to really engaging through process of elimination, whether the custodian or the employee or whoever has that type of information that is falling outside of the scope of something that is replicated on the server.
Custodian interviews are really important here. You know, just right. When you're actually placing a hold on this data, just to discuss with the custodian what potentially relevant information do you have on this device? Where else is it located, if anywhere else? And then really just talk to the person managing the case. Is this really something that we need to preserve and collect? It's really just this very iterative process. So not just to have a knee-jerk, hey, someone was using their phone for texting and there might be some, you know, there's some relevant data on here. Really, the analysis is, I think, a little bit more nuanced and contextualized here.
Agreed. And finally, Kim Ann, just to throw one more topic here. When it comes to legal holes in e-discovery and really piggybacking off of what Kamoy just said, how do we structure our announcements for e-discovery purposes on a BYOD program? So do you tailor your legal holes with the fact that you do have a BYOD program in mind to say we're looking for text messages that would not be replicated on a server, or we are only targeting email specifically? Can you share some thoughts on how that dynamic would work?
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, for me, text messages sometimes literally keep me up at night, because I think that when you talk about mobile devices, by and large, that's the only data that doesn't have like this readily more accessible source, right? It's usually just housed on the phone. And I think increasingly you're seeing that text messages and instant messages are becoming a viable form of business communication, for better or for worse. My position is that you have to address it in a legal hold notice. I don't think that you can necessarily put your head in the sand and believe that they are not relevant or not within the possession, custody, or control of the organization, such that you don't have an obligation to hold it, especially in the BYOD environment. So for me, it's something that I believe you have to address. I do agree with the custodian interviews. The question I think is getting at the not every case might be relevant. Text messages or things on a BYOD device may be relevant, but there's always that potential, and I think increasingly you're seeing that potential. And, you know, and when they arise in sticky, like employment situations for me, almost always these days have a text element to them. So you do really have to constantly sort of be adjusting that and addressing it.
Right. And really focusing in whenever a legal hold goes out, just keep in mind whatever BYOD program you have in place, it's going to be called into question at some point for your discovery. So thank you very much for the comment. That was really, really helpful. Let's move on to storage wars. This is more of an internal operational question, but I think it's very relevant in our roles in legal departments to really consider, especially when it comes to e-discovery and preservation of information that might exist on a BYOD. Storage wars are a reality when discussing where data sits within the organization. With a BYOD program, who is ultimately responsible for the storage and governance of the storage of company data versus personal data on an employee-owned device? Please share your thoughts on the commentary's role in proactively or reactively managing storage and governance of data on an employee-owned device. Kim Ann, I'm going to push this one to you first and give your perspective on how storage is managed or how it should be managed.
I think this is a really difficult question, to be honest. I think that the more the organization pushes to pay for the storage or provide that storage, the more it's clearly within their possession, custody, and control, and I think more responsibility. Again, we don't know where the courts stand on that question, but I think that the farther we go as an organization into that, the farther we're shifting to that's our responsibility. So that's my initial reaction to it. I mean, I think from an e-discovery perspective, it makes more sense for the organization to provide for the storage, because that way you're ensuring, especially now with like the new release of text messages being able to save to the cloud, it's important for like the organization to say, we're doing everything we can to ensure that this information on this phone is being preserved. And the individual who owns the phone doesn't want to pay for the extra storage is not like an impediment for us preserving data, as we may be obliged to do so. I wish I had the answer to this. I struggle back and forth. A lot of times I think people for this reason go for company issued devices so we could avoid these sticky questions.
I agree 100% on that. And I think segregating it out for making the company pay for a company issued device is a lot more strategic from a preservation perspective. And it definitely gives the legal department a little bit more of an absolution from the payment burden as well as the governance burden. However, if you take this into a different dynamic where, let's say, you are a global company and you have to manage two sets of storage management issues, where in Europe, if you're issued a company device, your information is on there, therefore it is your personal information and is therefore subject to privacy rules in a different country. So, not to circle back, but who has to end up paying for that storage? I would ask Kamoy, I know Swiss Re is an international company, but I also know that in your experience, this sort of issue might have come up. Do you have any thoughts from a global perspective, how the storage war actually takes place on a global basis?
I think it's a particularly thorny issue, to echo Kamoy's thoughts. I think the way to deal with it is mostly aspirational, honestly, the reduction of the commingling of the data. I think in that sense, then you can have a kind of semi-neat division of labor here between the employee and the company, right? So anything business related, you know, can only be done using certain apps, and the company maintains and stores those apps on a server. In that sense, the company is responsible for that level of storage. And anything that the employee has that's personal, they're responsible for that storage. So, for example, company can prohibit the use of private email and cloud for business purposes. I know the world isn't necessarily that neat, but I think that's part of something. And it echoes what we've all been saying, which is you have to make this clear in your end user agreement. What can actually be used for business purposes? Right. And I think once you actually nail that down, which apps, what text programs can actually be used, what's going to be backed up to the company server such that this is something that the company feels that they're actually storing appropriately, then I think you can make some headway with this. But totally and completely agree, this is really, really thorny because, as I mentioned, a lot of times this is aspirational. And we all know that when people actually start using their devices, they're not thinking as neatly as we are.
Right. Very good point. Very good point. It's very thorny. And Bonnie, just to end the question, from your perspective in the storage war for preservation and e-discovery perspective, what is some of the more optimal things that could be employed here with the BYOD policy? Are there any strategic benefits that you see where the company is more responsible for let's say, cloud storage versus data storage on the device? And is that burden to the employee or to the company? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Honestly, I don't have perspective on that other than kind of opinion. And I'm kind of on the Kamoy, you know, made a comment of that's why we do, you know, device company issued devices to kind of bypass these very difficult and sometimes oftentimes just not black and white in the answers. And it also kind of leads me back to something that Kamoy, actually two things that Kamoy brought up at the beginning of all this, to have everything very, you know, meticulously stated so that everybody involved, the company and the user, understand what is going on and what will possibly happen and how things are stored and where it all sits. You know, having that initial group, you know, the cross department or functional group where HR and finance and IT and legal, you know, e-discovery in there as well, you know, and corporate records and, you know, all these different people get to to the table and bring up what happens in the exit interview, what happens in the initial issuance of the devices or the agreement for BYOD. What kind of training are they going to have the users? Are there going to be corporate agreements for international device use? And what do those look like? So, of course, you're going to have your GDPR team in there, compliance officers and things like that. So at the end of the day, most people in e-discovery and anyone who's deposed a witness, just because, you know, the policy is this, it's the interviews. It really makes those interviews very important because, yeah, you're not supposed to use this application. And it's everybody sees it. There's a yearly education on it for the users. They have to click a little button that says, I agree, I won't do it. It doesn't mean that they're not going to do it. If your systems are all very locked down, you can't use a USB on your computer. Well, it's not to say that somehow they didn't get it somewhere else and they have it on this USB. So those interviews are really integral to establishing what really is there. So, I mean, as the interviewer, you know what the policies are. The user knows what they're supposed to be doing, but you still ask the question.
Right. And that is actually the perfect way to segue to our final question. And thank you very much for that. But the commentary of Principle 5 assumes if no data exists, then the employee-owned device is not a source of ESI. If this is the case, what is your opinion on maintaining a strong BYOD policy or a company-owned device policy to defend the stance to say no data exists, therefore it's off the table? What would be considered a perfect situation where the employee-owned devices would never be considered ESI sources subject to collection? I think this is kind of a round-robin topic, and I think everyone has a unique perspective here. Whether your company does not allow a BYOD policy or not, I would still like to hear everyone's thoughts in terms of what is the ideal situation to never consider a personal device a source of ESI. Bonnie, I'm going to start with you. Any thoughts on this subject? What would be your perfect situation?
Well, the perfect situation is the request, the document request. are, you know, I only want email. I don't want anything else. Well, great. Then preserve anything else, but we're only going to email. You've got the preservation established, but we're only going to collect email, or we're only going to collect whatever source, or the government investigation, we're only collecting these types of documents or whatever. So unless something is very, very specific in writing and everybody agrees, I mean, the obligation at the end of the day is to go find the related documents. So that would be my perfect, you know, where I clearly don't have to go there.
Right. But in the case of, you mentioned government investigations, I'm no stranger to that. And at times there are indications where it goes beyond the email, it goes directly to communications between employees or externally, and they do exist in the form of text messages. But as you do or do not have a BYOD policy, how is it defensible to say, well, no, we don't consider that a source of ESI because our policy simply states that you're not allowed to use your mobile device for quote-unquote business communications. Personal, that's fine, but business communications have to be monitored through one particular aspect, regardless of their form. And that's a loaded, beefy question. But I wanted to turn it back to Kim Ann. What do you think from a defensibility or policy perspective, how would you defend that type of statement where we're not allowed to collect because everything has to be done in this particular way?
I mean, for me, the perfect situation, the ideal BYOD and even company-issued device, because to be honest, I don't think they're very different in the real-world application, is do not create unique content on a mobile device, period. That's not to say that you can't have business communications, right? We could structure or architect a system where all of the emails back and forth are going to sync, or certain things within the app that you might interface with are going to sync, and I'm fine with that. But don't use text messages to conduct business because you're creating unique content. Don't modify a document and only store it on that device because you're creating content, right? That's not replicated elsewhere. To do that, I think you have to have a very strong policy, and I do think that you need to have a verification of that policy at least annually. Every employee that participates in a BYOD program is attesting to the fact that they continue to follow that policy. I think update training is important. I also think it's important to consider audit, right? And to make sure that you're creating some sort of like defense and proactively building that defense to say that here's our policy. It's a strong policy. We enforce it. We remind people of it. We go out and check. And, you know, that's all we can do to control this. I think that's a perfect world. I don't think that that's going to completely absconde you with responsibility to go out and get a phone here and there. But I think that to build a solid program, you have to have those measures in place.
I'm definitely liking your universe so far. Kamoy, just for some final thoughts on the defensibility of policy, what are some of your thoughts on this?
I totally agree with Kamand. In an ideal world, a unique world where everything is rainbows and puppies, I think you really have to have the company data just fully segregated from any personal data, and there cannot be any unique information on that device, such that you don't need to collect it and you don't need to preserve it. So 100% agree there. I also think it would be great if we could, as companies, have really strong and firm BYOD policies as referenced in the question, but I think that's really tough for most companies to take such a strong stance, especially the large ones. It's probably helpful from a defensible disposition perspective, but I think if you're going to take that type of strong stance as to no data, no ESI, you better have the due diligence to actually back that up. You better be able to say, we know X, Y, and Z about our BYOD program. This is the reality of how our users are actually using the data. And we can confirm with 99.9% certainty that this is exactly how, you know, the way the world works. So I think, you know, really, you know, realistically speaking, it'd be really difficult for a company to take such a strong stance. But you know, ideally, yes, absolutely. Segregate all that data and nothing unique on that device that needs to be collected or preserved.
Right. And that's the most ideal situation and dream policy, I think. I think everyone can agree that that is definitely the way that we would like to go. And I think that's why the commentary was focused so directly on that particular message. Obviously, the steps to get there are challenging for companies, large and small, depending upon what infrastructure and resources and what legal language is really available to protect the company's interests as well as the employee. So I think we just solved all the world's problems by saying we need more policy and more procedure, which is definitely a good approach. And as legal professionals working in a legal department or within the business of your company with the legal aspect, it's definitely worthwhile to move forward to take this to the appropriate people and communicate it out when the situation of a BYOD policy program or initiative really comes to the table, to be that stakeholder of legal, to either guard for risk and guard for the rights of their employees and their data. But obviously there's an operational value that really needs to be considered, and how do we really address it as best as possible without holding ourselves back from various concerns. Obviously costs are a concern, infrastructure, storage, and facilitation of proving that it is right for validation. So is a policy being effective? If it's not, if there's continual misuse or no use, how do you really enforce that and make it an effective policy at the end of the day? So with that being said, any final thoughts from the panel regarding this subject matter? Bonnie?
I think it's important to educate to the users. If it's like a compliance kind of yearly training or something, that they have to proactively say, I agree, you know, that they've looked at something, maybe they had to take a quiz or something, so that they really understand who owns that data, so that when your, you know, e-discovery project manager goes and talks to them, they're not getting, you know, the hand, like, no, you can't take my phone. It'll help in those situations later.
And Kamoy, any final thoughts from you?
I think it's really important for the company to be upfront with their expectations of how the BYOD program will be handled. Those end user agreements, I think, are really key. And just to give the employee the opportunity to opt out of the program if it's not going to meet their interests is, I think, crucial. And also, I think it's important to think and realize that this could be an iterative program. You can come back and say, we've had some experience with this over a couple of months, and we think we need to revise the program. So it's, you know, not that you need to jump out of the gate knowing everything. You can really take some time to figure out, whether it's through discussing it with your peers or through the actual development of the program, what really works best for your company.
Great. And Kim Ann, any final thoughts from you?
I agree with my co-panelists here that it's really important about the training and the message that we're sending. But also for me, I'm really interested to see where BYOD goes in the next few years. You see those devices like the iPhones and the iPads veering way to sort of the left in sort of like the privacy mode for the individual, but they're also part of everyday organizational like operations. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if there's technology or there's process or there's something that's going to be help us bridge the gap, because they both seem to be moving 100 miles in a different direction. We know that we need these devices. They're part of our everyday business operations, but the devices that we're using are personal devices. And how are we as organizations going to bridge that gap? So for me, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
That's a very good point. Thank you very much for bringing that up. Well, I'd like to thank everyone on the panel today. This is an enlightening discussion on the subject of BYOD, as well as the commentary from the Sedona Conference. I do encourage everyone to participate in future round-robin discussions such as these as podcasts for the ILTA organization. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.